Thanks so much for listening in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to talk about debt for a bit with you. Debt can be a tool. Hey, I'm in debt. I've got a... I'm paying off my home, or trying to anyway. Buying a home certainly is one way we go in debt. Getting an education, that's another way. Maybe starting a business. It can be hard to manage, and there are some pretty serious consequences if you can't keep up with the bills. And we're talking about debt collection. We'll talk lawsuits and bankruptcy, and a couple of guests for you. Josh Christensen here with us. He's an attorney who helps clients with bankruptcy, debt relief, and debt collection services. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, great to have you here. And Amanda Kosman back with us. Amanda is a family living educator with UW Extension's Human Development and Relationships Institute. Amanda coordinates and teaches financial capability programs in Walworth County. And Amanda, thank you for joining us once again.
Thank you for having me on the show again.
Well, as we talk with our two experts, I hope you'll join in. Let us know your questions about handling debt, or maybe you have questions about filing for bankruptcy. I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Amanda, most of us have some kind of a debt at one point or another in our lives, and often ongoing. It could be a mortgage, it could be a student loan, it could be a credit card. But when does debt become a problem?
Debt becomes a problem when people can't pay those things back and live the life that they really want to be able to live. When debt gets in the way and it's causing emotional stress for the individual, relationship stresses for them, when that debt is getting to the point where they financially can't live the life they want to, is really the biggest one when people start worrying about it the most and come to us. But there are those early warning signs of relationship issues, sleeplessness, and worrying that really compound and take away from people's quality of life.
Yeah. And people sometimes miss payments. Maybe they intend to hit the next due date, for example. What happens when you miss a payment or two?
Well, most people think through the process and they think, oh, I'm going to get a fee. Because, of course, the late payment fee is something that occurs quite often. But many times also that can reduce the credit score if it goes beyond a certain point. So I always tell my clients is to make that payment as soon as possible. And be very proactive. If you're going to miss one and you know you can't make it, call sooner. See if you can get that deadline extended or come up with a payment plan before it hits your credit report. So it can long-term affect you if it's something that's consistent, depending on your financial history. But also, it causes stress for people if you're thinking about it a lot before that payment is coming up. That might be the big red flag that you need to jump on this as early as possible.
And that credit score is pretty important.
Yes, it can be super important for most things. Most people need a good credit score.
I checked mine this morning before the show just to see where I was, and I was happy to note it was 829. So I'm in pretty good shape when it comes to if I needed another loan or something. Josh, could you walk us through what happens during a basic consumer collection lawsuit? How are you notified that you're being sued or by a debt collector or a creditor? That sort of
thing. Yes, certainly. So the first thing that happens is most people will end up get these advertising letters in the mail. My firm's one of them that sends these advertising letters out to everybody who's been served. The filing of a lawsuit is a public record in Wisconsin, so anybody, you know, including our law firm, can see who's been sued. So a lot of times it turns out that this is the first time that a person is notified that they've been sued, they get this advertising letter in the mail. From there, it really depends on this, whether this is a large claim suit or a small claim suit. A small claim suit is the most common type of debt collection lawsuit. In that type of a suit, usually a person is served by mail, get a copy of the summons complaint in the mail, and that gives them an opportunity to go back to court and assert any defenses that they have. If it's a large claim suit, they'll probably be served in person. It could be a process server, a private process server, could be a sheriff's deputy. But the important part is that this isn't a criminal action. The sheriff's deputy's not there to arrest the person or bring them to court that day. The sheriff's deputy or the private process server just signs a piece of paper that they handed the person the lawsuit, and that establishes the court's jurisdiction over the person.
Okay. So what sorts of laws do debt collectors have to follow when they're contacting you about the debt?
Well, the big one nationally is called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And in Wisconsin, we have the Wisconsin Consumer Act, which has a lot of the same protections. Among other things, a debt collector can't threaten you with a right that they don't have. So they can't say that we're going to have somebody on your street and we're going to arrest you unless you make a payment immediately. They can't contact third parties about the debt. They can't call up a sister or a brother or a neighbor and say, hey, would you get so-and-so to make us a payment? They can't continue to collect or to continue to communicate with a person after that person's demand not be contacted. So that doesn't prevent the debt collector from suing or going through other legal process. But in some cases, you can assert your rights under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act not to be contacted, and that'll at least stop phone calls and letters.
Yeah. Well, how do you respond, or how should you respond when you're notified?
Yeah, so the law says that a verbal notification is adequate to invoke the protections under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, but I always advise following it up with a writing. You get the address and the name of the debt collector that's calling you. You can assert the rights over the phone, but then write a letter, keep a copy of the letter for yourself, because if you're going to contact an attorney like me afterwards, that makes it a lot easier to prove what it is that you said, who you said it to, when you said it. And then if you, the debt collector violates the Fair Debt, Debt Collection Practices Act or the Wisconsin Consumer Act, makes it a lot easier to get damages.
So what happens if, let's say... Lee Rayburn is our technical director today. What if Lee says, oh, I got this notice. I think I'll just ignore it.
Yeah, it really.
What's going to happen to Lee? He's laughing right now. I'm seeing him through the screen here.
Sure. I guess it really depends on what the notice is and the collector and how collectible the person is. I've listened to some of your other debt collection or consumer protection issues, and there are definitely people out there that we call judgment proof, that a creditor can sue them, they can get a judgment against them, but there's really nothing that the collector can do to force payment after that, like wage garnishment. Social Security cannot be garnished for regular debts. So for a person that's retired, doesn't have assets that could be taken, doesn't have wages that could be protected, sometimes ignoring it is the best course of action. For other people, for other people that have wages to protect or even that just want the peace of mind, the mental toll that Amanda mentioned, sometimes filing for relief or getting debt relief help is advisable.
Yeah, I would think, I mean, if I was in that situation, the first thing I'd do is call an attorney. I mean, what? Amanda, you're nodding your head in agreement on that one, too. What is it? I would think an attorney could help you in a lot of ways, even emotionally.
Yeah, what I always suggest, if you are under some legal issues, that you should definitely contact an attorney to find out what your rights are. I try to work with my clients before they get there so they never see an attorney. So that's really my point. And when people start to talk to me, is sometimes they show up with that notice and we kind of walk through the process of contacting that creditor, seeing if they can do it. But really, I like to see people as a financial coach before they actually get to that point. And ideally, I would love to see everybody when they start feeling that emotional stress about their debts, before they miss those payments or when they anticipate it, so we can come up with a plan before that, so they never actually get to that attorney phase, and work out a plan and try to come up with how they can work through those debts before they become something that needs to go into the legal ramifications. But we also know that that isn't always possible. So as a financial coach, I am not an attorney. So I would always refer people to those who are, if they need that special sort of advice.
That sounds like good advice to me. We're talking with Amanda Kosman, family living educator with UW Extension's Human Development and Relationships Institute, and with attorney Josh Christensen. He helps clients with bankruptcy, debt relief, and debt collection services. And we have lots more to talk about in this area. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions and comments as we move along. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at debt collections lawsuits and bankruptcy on the show right now, and how to handle it all with our two guests. Josh Christensen, one of them, he's an attorney who helps clients with bankruptcy, debt relief, and debt collection services. Our other guest, Amanda Kosman, is a family living educator with UW Extension's Human Development and Relationships Institute. Amanda coordinates and teaches financial capability programs in Walworth County. You can join in. Tell us your strategy for managing your debt. Other questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And let's take a couple of questions. Greg and Plover, we'll go to you first. Hi, Greg.
Good morning, Larry. I've got a question regarding a Form 1099 I received this spring in the mail, indicating that a debt was written off and not paid. I don't know anything about it. I called the firm that sent the form. They have a number, an identification number on a 1099 for the account. They don't have any record of it. They referred me to a law firm they work with out of Milwaukee, and they told me there's no such thing. So I can't get any answers, any advice.
Josh?
Sure thing. My first thought would be to talk to your tax professional about a Form 982. I'm not qualified to provide tax advice. The IRS has some pretty specific guidelines on who can do that. But my understanding is there's a Form 982 that a person can file in response to a 1099-C for cancellation of debt income, and that may remove any liability that you have there. The other thought I had is that a 1099-C is, again, my understanding is just a notification that the taxable event may have occurred. It's a notification that a creditor sends to the IRS. Doesn't mean that a taxable event has occurred. Doesn't mean that you're ultimately going to be liable for it. So definitely something to talk with your tax professional about.
All right. Greg, thank you for calling. Let's turn to Ann in Marshfield. Hi, Ann.
Hello, Larry and guests Amanda and Josh. I am fortunate that I can pay my day-to-day expenses without using credit. Thank God. But what I'm wondering is if, since I don't use my credit cards very often, is that hurting my credit score? I do use my bank cards.
Cash cards, in other words, Ann, you're saying.
Yeah, the debit cards.
Yeah, the debit cards. Okay, Amanda, you want to take a crack?
Yes, actually that can affect your credit negatively. So one of the things is, first I would wonder is, are you planning to make any purchases that you need good credit? So that's one of the things. And I want to commend you for having some really great financial principles that you're putting in place. And then also, what your financial goals are in the future are going to play into this. One of the things I suggest, though, if you're worried about your credit score going down, is to maybe use those for small things like gas, for example, because we all know that part of your credit score is that revolving credit. So it's important to use that. Your credit score and your credit report are not about how well you manage your finances. It's all about how well do you use your credit. So you have to use your credit to show them that you're good at it. So you might want to think about putting your gas for the month on there and then paying it off at the end of the month. The balance that's reported to the credit agencies is the balance at the time of the statement. So if you pay it off every month, that's okay. That's going to be really good for your credit. So you can keep doing that. I've heard some myths out there about not paying it off or leaving $5 or those kind of things. So those are just myths. I also am going to encourage you to keep it under 20% of that credit card. So if it's $1,000, you know, you got to keep it under that 20% line to keep your credit normal. Lower the better to help keep that in there. So yes, you do have to use your credit to prove that you're credit worthy, because they want to look at that and do that. But err on the side of keeping it really low to that 20%, using it consistently. And I always say those small purchases like gas, or if you have subscriptions to like Netflix and stuff, put those on the credit card because you got some certain protections that come with that credit card too. And then paying it off each month so that you are showing you're using it responsibly.
That makes sense. Now, in my own case, maybe this is stupid, but most days I'll remember and take a quick look. If I've got something charged up for the day, I pay it off right then online.
I do a lot of the similar things. Now, everybody's situation is a little different. So if you have a balance and you're paying it down, that might be sufficient, Larry, and you can pay it off every single time. And it sounds like your credit score is really good. So that's working out really good for you. But for some people have to be more intentional. If you don't need to use that credit, it happened to my dad. And actually his insurance came up after he paid off his house. He had a zero, like a goose egg of a credit score after so many years, because he paid off his house. He didn't have a loan on his vehicle. He didn't use his credit cards, none of that stuff. And his insurance rates actually went up. We called them, they brought them back down for him. And we started getting him the credit worthiness that he wanted to be able to get those good things. So, it sounds like, Larry, it's working great for you. So if that's a principle that's working, I always encourage people to stick with the ones that they're used to that are working really good. If our caller is concerned about her credit score, if she knows it's going down, that's just some of those principles of making those small purchases and showing that she can use credit responsibly, consistently. That's really important.
Ann, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call, and use those cards. A little bit. Appreciate your call very much. I wanted to get into bankruptcy, and Kyle in Winneconne has a question relating to it, so I think that might get us right into the whole discussion about bankruptcy. Kyle, what's on your mind?
Hey, thank you for taking my call, Larry and guests. I have a friend, and they recently bought a new property for rental, and they put a lot of the work done on credit cards. And probably around $50,000. And the tenant that they got in ended up not paying for quite some time. So now they have all this credit card debt to pay and they're behind. I was wondering if bankruptcy would be a reasonable option.
Chris, do you want to, or Josh, excuse me, Josh, do you want to take a crack at that?
Yeah, certainly. I'd certainly recommend that they look into it. Whether or not it's going to be right for them in their situation, there's going to be a lot of moving parts that go into that calculation. Mm-hmm. But $50,000 in credit cards is pretty substantial and going to be more than a lot of people can pay back in a reasonable amount of time. The important parts, when they contact an attorney, just be upfront and honest about everything involved in the case, because that rental property is going to count as an asset in the bankruptcy, regardless of what type of bankruptcy it is that they file. And the attorney is also going to want to know the details about taking out the debt, what it was used for.
Kyle, there you go. It's worth looking at. So what is personal bankruptcy? I mean, what does it technically mean?
Yeah, sure thing. So the filing of the bankruptcy, probably 75% of the cases are Chapter 7 cases. The Chapter 7, technically a liquidation because there's a trustee appointed to liquidate all a person's assets. Most of the Chapter 7 bankruptcy cases that an individual will file, there's nothing for the trustee to liquidate. Their property is entirely protected by exemptions. Exemptions is just a law that allows a person to protect certain property from creditors. So there's an exemption to protect equity in a homestead, $75,000 in equity in a homestead for a person, $150,000 for a married couple. There's an exemption that can protect goods and clothes, consumer goods, $12,000 person, equity in motor vehicle, $4,000 plus any part of the $12,000 that you don't use to protect your other stuff. And so for most people, their property doesn't exceed these exemption limits. The bankruptcy takes about 3 to 5 months. You get a discharge at the end of it. The discharge makes it so the creditors can never collect on those debts ever again.
And there was a story that somebody told me that once you go through it all, your credit becomes good again because you don't owe anything.
Certainly possible. I always say, though, that I can't advise which way the credit's going to help. Go. The Fair Isaac Corporation doesn't tell us how they calculate that for sure. But I have heard that once those creditors are reported as $0 amounts, that a score goes up.
Randy and Ripon, your turn. Hi, Randy.
Hi. I'm 68 years old and I'm still working part time, but I'm falling behind. I'm 2 months behind on my house payment. My credit card payment, which I had used to pay for medical bills from a heart attack several years ago. And I'm wondering if I should, I hate to do it, but if I should declare bankruptcy. But I talked to lawyers and they want $2,000. And if I had $2,000, I'd pay my bills. So I don't know what to do.
All right. Well, Josh.
Yeah, unfortunately, that number sounds about right, and I don't know that I can say that there's attorneys that charge less. Another thought, though, I think you said Ripon. The Ripon area is covered by the legal aid of Wisconsin, and the northern half of the state's covered by Judicare. These are legal service organizations. They evaluate a person based upon need, and then if the person qualifies, Judicare will pay legal fees in a civil case like a bankruptcy. We take several Judicare cases a month, and it's certainly possible, 68 years old, working part-time, that you might qualify under those income and asset guidelines that Legal Aid of Wisconsin has. So they'd probably be worth a call to see if they can pay attorney's fees.
Yeah. Mark in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hey, I wanted to make a comment, a couple things on I forgot her name, but one of your guests is speaking.
Amanda.
So I use my credit card for everything. I mean, even if it's a dollar, at the end of the month, I pay everything off. So, and basically it's thousands of dollars and it's basically an interest-free loan for at least a month. And the other thing about the protection is, and like I said, I use it for everything I can. And we were doing a home improvement project and we put $20,000 down on the credit card. A couple months in, this guy went out of business, and we weren't the only ones. We looked up on CCAP, and lots of people around Madison were suing this guy. Of course, they're not going to get nothing out of him. We just turned it into our credit card company, and we got paid back. The credit card company paid us back because it was services that weren't performed. So that's where that protection is great for. Otherwise, we would have been $20,000 in the hole, since that guy didn't have any money, we wouldn't have had any recourse.
Yeah, Amanda, you're smiling a little bit on that.
Yep, those are those protections I talk about. When you're always doing those home improvement projects and stuff, that is great advice. Just those general good financial principles is there's some protections on credit cards that are super important. I always talk about travel is another one that sometimes those credit cards have protections for you if something happens in another country. When you're looking at credit cards, it's important to look at your lifestyle. What are those perks and protections you can receive by using those credit cards versus your debit cards? Because a debit card typically doesn't report, so they don't really help your credit score. So you want to make sure beyond credit, there's other reasons to use that credit card as well. Thank you so much for pointing that out.
Thanks so much, Mark. Amanda, if you're juggling more than one financial commitment, what's the best way to stay on top of it? That's what you often do, I'm sure, with your clients.
Right. Everybody's situation is a little bit different, but I can tell you what people typically end up doing. So what we do is we tend to, and this is what I see, I've coached hundreds of people, and we first will list out all of the debts. So where do you owe money? Even if you're not paying on them, maybe it's your student loans are in forbearance. What is that amount that you owe? What are the interest rates that you're paying on those? What's the minimum payment that's due? And, you know, that kind of information is very relevant when we come up with a plan. It's first to get a really good picture of it. I also encourage people to think to keep on top of checking their credit report to make sure that there's no scams that come up. Right now, since COVID, you can get those once a week. So I really encourage people to go to the annualcreditreport.com and get those things and keep on top of that. But once we have a really good picture of all the things you owe, how much the interest rates are, is to really think through which ones are the most important. Of course, housing and that kind of stuff, super important. Which ones are the highest interest rates, and figure out which ones you can pay. And we usually do kind of a debt snowball or power pay kind of program, depending on how the person, their financial situation is. Everybody's is a little bit different. You know, how do we figure that out? Is the most wiggle room going to be gotten because you paid down the lowest balance, or is it the highest interest rate that you want to balance first? And really prioritize those. One of your callers talked about how he's behind on his mortgage payment. Contacting creditors and seeing if you can make that manageable for yourself. And maybe it's extending those payments longer. Sometimes it's about, you know, getting into some different programs that might help pay those down or hold them off for a couple of months. There are some different ways that strategies you can work with your creditors and put those things in so that you can manage them. But first, the first step is, of course, knowing how much money you have, getting a budget, knowing how much money you're going to put out. Don't make promises you can't keep. So don't tell them you're going to put $1,000 in if you can only make $500 payments. So really getting a really good picture, thinking through what are the best steps for you as an individual, like how much extra could you put down towards something? Do you have things in savings so you can do maybe, you know, negotiate if you owe $1,000, if you promise to give them $500 today, will they discharge that? So talking to those creditors early on and getting them on board so that you can come up with a plan for yourself so that you don't have to go and talk to Josh, hopefully in the future. And really thinking through. So, I mean, getting a really good picture and then coming up with that plan that works for your lifestyle is really important.
Yeah, and I think that the human nature is, I don't want to talk to that person I owe that money to. And that's just actually probably the opposite of what you ought to be thinking.
When I tell them that they're working with their creditors is make sure they're prepared. Don't take the call on the fly when you're in the grocery store because you're not prepared for that. You want to know how much money do you have? How much can you give them? How much monthly could you promise? And don't make promises you can't keep. So I always say is if you get a notice, you call them when you're prepared as soon as possible. Get prepared and call them and know before you make those promises so that you're not getting the call when you're caught off guard and you say, oh yeah, well just put it on my credit card or put it on my, you know, take it out of my bank account. And then all of a sudden you have overdraft fees. You don't want to say anything and always get that stuff in writing too. So if you get them that they talk down a certain amount before you give them that $500, make sure they send you an email that says, if you give us $500, we're going to discharge your $1,000 debt. But you want to make sure that you're thinking through it and prepared for those conversations. But having them is super important. A lot of people just want to ignore those things. Like you said, Larry, they want to ignore it. They don't, oh, please, I just don't even want to talk about this. But it's best to jump on it early.
Stephen in Sister Bay, we'll go to you. Hi, Stephen. Oops, Are you there, Steve? Oh, I guess we lost Stephen, who had a credit card question. I was amazed at I always pay my credit card off, and I was looking at a family member's credit card bill one day, and I noticed that the interest was 29.9%. And the payments were mostly interest, the monthly payments.
It's a lot more common than you think.
I got so mad I paid it off and told that person to pay me back with no interest, and that person did. And I felt good about it, and I know that person did as well. Vivian in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. I'm at an age where I could end up in the hospital overnight or from a fall or something. My children are out of the city. One is out of state. I set up automatic monthly minimums on my credit card. So if I'm incapacitated for a period of time, the minimum payment will be made, avoiding late fees. I will, of course, pay interest on the balance, but there won't be any late fees or compounded late fees. And it's really simple to do.
Yeah. Amanda, good idea?
That's a great idea. Actually, that's what I do. Larry, I'm like you. I tend to pay mine off almost right away. I wait till the statement date sometimes, but I do still have that set up just like you, that minimum payment will go out before that is due. Because if I don't look at my credit or I don't look at it on my phone, I might've missed it. So I never want those late things either. So that is a great principle to make sure that just that minimum amount comes out. And that way you're covered and you never forget to go and transfer those funds over. So love that tip. Thank you.
We were talking about death earlier on the show. And if somebody dies, if you're the only holder of the bank, of your bank, then I think isn't it true, Josh, that the bank freezes your account?
I don't know that I can speak to that. I think it's certainly possible that a bank could do that. As to what happens on death, I can speak to that, that a person can't inherit debt, that a person can inherit property and assets. But if a person passes away while owing a creditor money, that money's not going to be required to pay by the person's heirs or children. Sometimes it can be required to be paid out of the person's estate and the person who passed away their assets, but others in your family don't inherit a person's debt.
And Amanda, were you going to add to that?
Yes, I was going to say Extension offers a program called Planning Ahead. It's a 7-part session, and we talk through and go through all of these little things. You always want to, when you have an account, make sure that you have set up all those paid on death or transferred upon death so that you don't run into any of these issues. And also we talk a lot about talking to your family members about what debts you have and having that in writing so that this can actually get taken over by them, any of those important things. And everybody knows whose responsibility it is, who gets paid, how to pay them, and what things you need to do. So we talk a lot about having those conversations with your families in that Planning Ahead program. So it's a lot more complicated than you think, but we go in. It's a 7-part program that we can, and it's free through your big extension.
You know, our earlier guests mentioned Planning Ahead and were very, very positive experiences with people that they've worked with. And we'll make sure that that's up on our page today, WPR.org/Larry. Go to today's date, and we'll have more information about Extension's Ahead program, Planning Ahead. Amanda, Josh, thank you so much for being with us today. I hope we have a chance to do this again, and appreciate your help very much. Thank you both.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks. It's been great.
Amanda Kosman is a family living educator with UW Extension's Human Development and Relationships Institute. And Josh Christensen, Josh, an attorney, helps clients with bankruptcy, debt relief, and debt collection services. Coming up, we're going to take a look at food security in our state. I'm Larry Mueller.